Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 7, Chapter 8, The Lord Slays the King of the Demons, text number 44. Shri Pitara Uchu Shadanino Dibabuje Prasavam Tanujar Datiyani Tirta Samayep Ya Pi Bat Tilambu Tasyodaran Naka Vidirya Vapadyad Archat Tasmai namo nigri raye kila dharma goptre Yeah, word for word is longer than the translation, the purport. Shri Pitra Uchu. The inhabitants of Pitra Lokya said, Shradani, the performers of the Shraddha ceremony, offering of food grains to dead forefathers by a particular process. Naha or ar. Adi Bubuje. Enjoyed. Prasabam by force. Tanujai by her sons and grandsons. Dattani offered. Tirtha Samaye at the time of bathing in the holy places. Api even. Abibat drank. Tila Ambao, offering of water with sesame seeds. Tasya of the demon. Udarat from the abdomen. Naka Vidirna, pierced by the nails of the hand. Vapat, the skin of the intestines of which. Ya, he who, the personality of Godhead. Archat, obtain. Tasmai, unto him. The personality of Godhead. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Nriharaye, who has appeared as half lion and half man, Narahari. Nrihari. Akila, universal. Dharma, religious principles. Goptre, who maintains. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The inhabitants of Pitri Loka prayed, let us offer respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrsimhadev, maintainer of the religious principles of the universe. He has killed Hiranyakashipu, the demon who by force enjoyed all the offerings of the Shraddha ceremonies performed by our sons and grandsons on the anniversaries of our death, and who drank the water with sesame seeds offered in holy places of pilgrimage. By killing this demon, O Lord, you have taken back all the stolen property from his abdomen by piercing it with your nails. We therefore offer our obeisances, respectful obeisances unto you. No. Who knows what property we're keeping in our abdomen? Because he at least got back the sesame seeds with the water. Purport. It is the duty of all the householders to offer food grains to all their departed forefathers. But during the time of Hiranyakashipu, this process was stopped. No one would offer a shudder obeisances of food grains to the forefathers with great respect. Thus, when there is a demoniac rule, everything concerning the Vedic principles is turned upside down. All the religious ceremonies of yajna are stopped. The resources meant to be spent for yajna are taken away by the demoniac government. Everything becomes chaotic, and so, consequently, the entire world becomes hell itself. When the demons are killed by the presence of Nrisimhadev, everyone feels comfortable, irrespective of the planet upon which he lives. The inhabitants of Pitriloka prayed, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadev, maintainer of the religious principles of the universe. He has killed Hiranyakashipu, the demon, who by force enjoyed all the offerings of the Shraddha ceremony performed by our sons and grandsons on the anniversary of our death, and who drank the water with sesame seeds offered in holy places of pilgrimage. By killing this demon, O Lord, you have taken back all this stolen property from his abdomen by piercing it with your nails. We therefore wish to offer our respectful obeisances unto you. The Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Yaya tamam prabhajante tam sataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante murusha partha sarvashaha. That all of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Kunti. There are two ways of going, either up or down. Going up means that one will gradually come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Vedic culture is meant to gradually introduce, to give a process of elevation rather than degradation. There is the best process, and then there's lesser processes. There's best thing to do, and there's other things to do. But the other things to do are not all equal. And so the Vedas encourage, wherever one is at, wherever one can understand, do something which would be progressive rather than degrading. Even for the lowest of men, for instance, the animal eaters, there is encouragement perform sacrifice or yajna. As we've heard before, I'm sure you've heard, that there's even a process by which you can eat goats, if you're interested. If you've never had a goat burger, there is a process by which you can get one. Mac burger. And that is, you take a goat up to a secluded place, and on the new moon night when there's no moon, you whisper in its ear, "My dear goat, now I'm going to cut your throat." But don't worry, because in my next lifetime I'll become a goat, or in the future I'll become a goat, and you'll become a human being, and you'll be able to cut my throat. I get a goat burger, and you get a goat burger in the future too. But that way, by chanting this mantra enough times, killing enough goats, after a while one thinks, do I really want to become a goat? Is it really worth a burger, one burger or two, to become a goat? I think I better give this up. Maybe there's something better to eat than a goat. So the mantra itself may not be purifying in one sense, just you chant goat swaha. But actually, At the beginning of every Vedic hymn or mantra, there's a chanting of Om, which is invoking Krishna. Om, Om Kar, Rasoham, Apsukantaya, Pravasi Shasti, Siddhaya, Prabhava, Prabhava means Omkar. So Krishna says, I am Omkar. Because Krishna is everything, but Omkar is his impersonal representation. The origin of this material world is Omkar. And because Krishna is everything, it also contains Krishna. But generally people address Krishna as Omkar in an impersonal way, and therefore Krishna only reveals that part of Omkar to them. In any case, by chanting Omkar, then one becomes gradually purified. And by chanting the mantra, then, because Omkar is there, one may eventually get the intelligence that this is not a good thing to do. So they both go together. The chanting of Omkar helps purify one enough to realize that I better stop doing this. Similarly, there are many, many injunctions in the Vedic literature for different kinds of sacrifices, different types of austerities, etc. But if there's a progress, if there's any one of those things, sacrifice, charity, or austerity, then one will actually see, for instance, if one performs austerity by stopping sense gratification, then one will see one actually becomes more powerful. Just like sometimes we may fast, rarely, but anyhow, sometimes we may fast like on Janmasthami or something. And then prasadam takes a lot better. We may think we missed something, but actually when we eat prasadam, we honor it even better. We actually appreciate it, at least I do, appreciate it a lot more. Simply by some austerity, one becomes more powerful, and then one gets the result of that austerity. Of course, if by becoming powerful you kill your enemy, just like people go through the austerity practicing martial arts so they can kill someone. But that's compared to just like a vulture. A vulture has very good eyes, and his business is eating dead bodies. But he can go very high in the sky. But his business is looking down to see where there's a dead body so it can come and eat it. One may become elevated by austerity or charity or sacrifice, but if the objective is something low, then one rises high and then comes low. We find many great yogis after practicing so much austerity and penance, then the result is that they offend some saintly person because of enviousness, like Durvasa Muni, when he saw that Ambarish was being glorified and worshipped and honored more than he was in spite of his mystic powers. Therefore he was envious of Ambarish Maharaj and he wanted to kill him and find some pretense of killing him. But the result of that pretense that Ambarish Maharaj had dared to drink water before he had eaten his meal. Imagine if we were so strict nowadays that someone ate before the sannyasi and therefore someone took hairs from his body and made demons and killed everyone. Come, everyone's, you know, into the temple room, everyone's dead. With a glove demon in their hand. The ultimate offense. But Ambarish, that Durvasa Muni took it very seriously, was prepared to kill Durvasa Muni. I mean, kill Ambarish Maharaj. But the result was that Durvasa Muni practically was burnt by the Sudarshan Chakra of Vishnu, Lord Vishnu. So, by becoming powerful, it will not do one very much good unless the objective is actually something spiritual. Otherwise, we become powerful, and we become ants, we become germs, Indra Gopa germs. We've gone up and down, because generally we become powerful, and then we misuse that power, and then we fall down into some abominable species of life. And then after suffering in those abominable species of life, we go through austerity and charity and penance again and rise up, only to fall down again. There's the myth of Sisyphus, who is in a hole. The gods put him into the hole, and put a big, and his job, his service, was to push this big, heavy boulder out of the hole. But as soon as he almost got to the top and was about to push the rock out of the hole, the rock would fall back, and he'd have to start all over. And that's going on eternally. So that's the analogy of the material existence. Everyone's working hard to become famous, powerful, whatever, and when one achieves objectives, because the whole aim is ultimately just sense gratification, maybe subtle rather than gross sometimes, but subtle sense gratification after a while turns into gross sense gratification. You can't continuously think about something and not eventually do it. Just like, for instance, say they had prasadam, they had some pizza, which was everyone is feeling separation from. And then you knew that they had pizza in a certain room and someone told you not to eat it. Then immediately intense desire came to eat it as soon as they made that gave you that instruction. And so the whole day you're just thinking, I'm not supposed to eat it, but I really want to eat it. And it becomes overwhelming. You can't think about anything else. Even the thought of Krishna enters into your mind and you say, why are you disturbing me? And so you burst through the door and finally get the peace and go, oh, relief at last. Therefore, unless we can fix our minds upon some higher objective, then even we get eventually what we want in the material world, it won't satisfy us. And therefore, we'll constantly search for something different. But at least, if one follows the Vedic instructions, then by chanting Omkar before the other mantra, then one will gradually become purified and hopefully realize that this is inferior. I should look for something superior. As I mentioned before, there's a lecture where Prabhupada was talking. It was during Durga Puja, which Prabhupada mentions is the most famous celebration in Bengal especially. And Durga Puja is not exactly, you know, a highly spiritual celebration. It's very bad for the goats. On that day, they kill thousands of goats to sacrifice to Kali. Although Kali is a vegetarian, but her followers aren't necessarily vegetarians. And she has ghostly friends, and so the ghosts, they eat the remnants. So Kali Prasad is not the goat, it's actually ghost Prasad. Maha goat. And during that celebration, they make a deity of Durga Devi, many deities of Durga Devi, usually out of clay and straw, and they worship her before the end. At the end of the celebration, they throw her into the ocean or into the Ganges. That's the gratitude they have. Thank you very much for the benedictions. We don't need you anymore. Swaha. Into the river. Now, during that celebration, Prabhupada was trying to give a lecture in Mayapur, and there was so much music going on. But their music, they don't really care what they play. They're not playing the songs of the acharyas, believe me. They have something from Mary Martin's Sound of Music. You've heard of the Sound of Music by Mary Martin? The hills are alive with the sound of music, songs which they've sung for thousands of years. It's from a famous book called The Sound of Music. It's about some lady who goes to teach the king of Thailand, his children, music. One of these typical mundane romantic movies. And she's singing. So this is what they're singing in the background. The hills are alive with the sound of music. That's where they have that famous song, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, So, La, Ti. Do, a deer, a female deer. You never heard that? A drop of golden sun. Me, a name I call myself. You never heard that? It's called Mary Martin, Sound of Music. Anyhow, they're playing that in the background. And it's blasting. You can't, because in India, they don't have, these speakers or something. They have these huge things that blow your ears off. You can't hear yourself thinking because you can't think anymore. you can't think anymore. You can't hear anymore. And so they're blasting. This other devotee asked Prabhupada, which is better, the Christians who are worshiping, Lord Jesus Christ in their temple or church, and these worshippers of Durga, who are worshiping this deity of Durga in a less than sattvic way? So Prabhupada's reply was that actually the Durga worshippers are better, because if they follow properly the worship of Durga, which includes Om in their mantras, then gradually they'll become purified because they're following the Vedic culture. And by that purification, gradually they'll come to higher and higher types of worship until eventually they'll come to Vishnu worship, Krishna worship. It may take a long time. They may have to become goats for some births. But eventually they'll get there. A long time. But on the other hand, if one is following, Christianity, Prabhupada was referring to, generally it's not everyone is a personal worshiper of Jesus Christ, nor is there any following of Vedic culture. There may, of course, Lord Jesus Christ was a follower of the Vedic culture, but his followers are not necessarily understanding what he said because his words are not in disciplined succession. And therefore the purpose of what he was talking about and mantras wherever else, invoking the actual name of Krishna or God or Vishnu is not there. And they don't understand Lord Jesus Christ so clearly. So there's no clear direction towards ultimate liberation. There's moral principles are there. And of course, Lord Jesus Christ talked to the essence to learn to love God with all their heart, with all their might, with all their soul. And like unto that to learn to love thy neighbor as thyself. But his followers miss the essence and they take something which is unauthorized as super important and which is not important, which is actually important, they neglect. And therefore sometimes they don't make any progress. Matter of fact, sometimes they become degraded. In a magazine in the 60s when America was involved in the Vietnamese War, supposedly as a Christian crusade, there was a little drawing, and in it, the United States was bombing South Vietnam extensively, and there's the devil was there, and he said, "I'm really having a hard time keeping up with the Christians." So it is not that, because Prabhupada used to say that Lord Jesus Christ's teachings, the essence of them, is part of the Vedic philosophy. But people don't necessarily, they claim they're Christians, but they don't follow his teachings, especially the teaching, thou shalt not kill. And therefore they don't really take advantage of the teachings that he had to offer. Even the teachings that should be at least directing one towards elevation morally. if not directing one towards God and spiritual life. But the Vedic literature is generally clearer, and here we find that the Pitris are also mundane. They're in a mundane planet, Pitri Loka, but it's a higher planet than this planet, and one gets there by following the Vedic culture, offering something to the ancestors, some kind of appreciation that everything here doesn't belong to us. We have to show some gratitude to our forefathers. Not that we're born and our parents take care of us, and after we get a certain age, we say, get lost, God, Dad. Get lost, Mom. I don't need you anymore. And when they get old, you put them in an old age home and hope they disappear as soon as possible so you can get their inheritance. So that kind of appreciation means that in the future, your children will do exactly the same thing as you're doing to your parents, because that's what they're learning, what they're supposed to do. And you'll wind up in an old age home with your children wishing you dead for all the work you've did to them. So some gratitude towards the forefathers should be there, because otherwise we wouldn't. That's how we get this body. And that forefather, ultimately, the source of all the forefathers is Krishna. He's the one who's empowered the forefathers and empowered us. So some gratitude should be there, such as offering some sacrifice for the Pitris. And that way we can, by chanting Om, we might eventually come and realize that actually it's Krishna, through the Pitris, is giving us opportunities to make spiritual advancement. And therefore we appreciate, when we appreciate the Pitris, we appreciate them as expansions or representatives of Krishna. And therefore, even in the worship of those denizens of Pitri Loka, we're also worshiping Krishna. But that's what the Vedic sacrifices are meant to give us. Otherwise, if we don't perform Vedic sacrifices, then we have so-called modern civilization, which is just worshiping people's tongue, belly, and genital. That's the extent of their worship. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
How this mechanism of transferring the benefits of the sacrifice, you know, works actually. For example, offering grains to the forefathers. This sounds like they don't have grains there.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak there. no chapatis, no. Even if you want to make a good pizza, you can't do it. No, it's the mood of the offering. They have a different kind of body. Just by the mood and the offering, they don't necessarily get the grain, but just the desire to please them and following the Vedic sacrifice, therefore they get that vibration actually is enough to satisfy them.
Because Pitriloka and other heavenly planets are higher planets.
Yeah.
And they are much, much more capable of doing things.
Not necessarily. Especially Pitriloka. You're thinking of Indraloka or someplace. Pitriloka depends upon sacrifices by their... They get there because they sacrifice for the forefathers. And they stay there because their descendants sacrifice for them. It's not an automatic. You know, I'm here in Pitri Loka and I control the universe. That's what, therefore, in the Vedic culture, it's very important to get a son who can perform these sacrifices. Otherwise, you go to the heavenly planets, Pitri Loka, and then if you don't get a son to perform the sacrifice, you have to fall down.
But this is because the relatives or sons, they offer... offering to Krishna, and benefit of that they use, or...
Well, their offering is to the Pitris, but they're offering in relation to Krishna when they chant Om. Because Om is... They may not even be conscious of what they're doing, but because they're offering Om, therefore the forefathers get some benefit. Otherwise, if they just offered it to the forefathers, not much benefit would be there. So it shows you, if you're praying to Krishna on behalf of someone, then they get benefited.
So Krishna, as a Paramatma, transfers benefits, or...
Yeah, he's the one who's doing everything. Not that we're offering some sacrifice and, sorry Krishna, we just left you out. No, this was Kamai Saistarvidi Gana Prabhajantena Devata. Those who are lusty, they worship the demigods. But yo yo yam yam tunum bhakta shariyashitum ichami tasyam tasyatram sharam tameva vididamyam. I am in everyone's heart of the super soul, and as soon as one tries to worship the demigods, I make his faith firm so he can. I make his faith firm. Yo yo yam nam tunum bhakta shariyashitum ichami tasyam tasyatra sharam. Tam eva vididam yaham. Seventh? I mean, everyone's heart is a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so he can devote himself to that particular deity. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and attains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. So it's Krishna benefits the pitris, and it's Krishna benefits one who's offering the sacrifice.
So any sacrifice which is objective is Krishna, then that intention is transferred to the person who is benefited.
Well, people, even if they don't intentionally try to please Krishna, but because they're chanting Om and they're following the chanting the mantras that Krishna has given in the Vedas, therefore there's some credit. I mean, it's not transcendental spiritual bliss, but you get material elevation. And if you don't do that, then you get material degradation.
So if the pitris chant Om, they don't have the same benefits.
What's that?
If the pitris and the higher plants chant Om mantras, and they cannot do a sacrifice for pleasing Krishna there.
Of course they can, but I don't, you know, but they're dependent on the forefathers, on their descendants to keep them there. But a lot of times on these planets they're just enjoying. Not necessarily. I mean, they may be devotees to some degree, I don't know, on Pitri Loka. But here they're offering prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva, so they must be at least some of the representatives of Krishna consciousness. But exactly what goes on there, I don't know. I don't know.
But as mentioned in the Brihad Gautamrita, they can elevate from that position also up, no?
But most of the time they don't. They're absorbed in enjoy. They went there because they want to enjoy. And that's what they do. Try to enjoy. It's like you go to a big feast. You enter into the room, there's so many preparations there. So what are you going to do? Fast? You went there to eat. That's why Prabhupada said, Dhritarashtra was wondering, now that they assembled on the battlefield Kurukshetra, what did they do? What you have huge armies, they go to battlefield, what are they going to do? They're going to fight. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.